And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 808. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We have the Chicago White Sox time. It's an exciting young team spending some money, trying to make a go for it in the AL Central. In order to help me break them down as he has each and every season since we started this team-by-team preview setup, you can find him on Fantrax, Rotoballer. He's a co-host of the Fantasy Baseball Beat. He's on Twitter at MDRC0508. The good doctor himself, Mike Carter. How we doing, my friend?
Oh, my gosh, Bubba. So 808 of these. I think I've been on like 105. No, I'm kidding. Hey, man, it's always a pleasure to be on with you. I love coming on this show. I love being on with you. Thank you so much for having me and getting ready to talk about my favorite squad. And I don't know if there's anybody else in the fantasy world that you and I kind of run in that is a White Sox fan. I think I might be the only one. Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, there's not many, that's for sure. But something tells me there might be more coming if they keep making the moves and growth as they have. But you know how this works. There could be some additions to the flock sooner than later. Before we start talking White Sox, I kind of said where they can find you. Let everybody know what you got going on, because I know you dropped a new article at Rotoballer recently and some other good stuff.
Yeah.
So let us know.
Yeah, things are ramping up, right? So, you know, I had a little bit of time off there after the season was over, but Rotoballer, I just had a piece come out on some 7 players that I think are mid-round to late-round draft picks. They were all offensive players. A couple of them we'll actually talk about on this show today. So I'll be doing the same thing at Rotoballer again this year. I'll be covering the waiver wire a couple of times a week, trying to find those players that are rostered in less than 50%. Of leagues that can help you boost your categories. I'll also be returning to Fantrax and covering bullpens there on a weekly basis. And the Fantasy Baseball Beat's going to have a little bit of a change this year. Torres is stepping out to be with family, and that's the number one priority, and we totally support him with that. We hope that he'll be back at some point, but Dave and I are going to continue on at Pitcher List and do that. So I'm going to be busy. I'm also going to be the assistant freshman baseball coach at Batavia High School again this year. So I'm going to have baseball coming out the nose here. Starting Wednesday really is kind of the big kickoff for me. So I'm very excited to be back and get ready to do it. I am on the IL right now. I do have Achilles tendonitis and a bone spur in the back of my foot right now, which is making moving around a little bit difficult, but I have this gigantic Frankenstein boot that's allowing me to do that. So you're not going to keep me down too long. I'll be back and ready to roll here when it's time for hitting fungos.
That's awesome. Once my little one's old enough and probably doesn't want to hang out with me anymore, I wouldn't mind coaching some ball, because I always enjoyed doing that before she was around. I helped out here and there, so it's a good way to keep at it, as you and I and many others just live for this game. That's why we sit here and talk about this game. But more importantly, go check out Mike's work. It's awesome work. He was on the bullpen show with Rick Graham earlier this year. That was a fun one we went through. And then obviously the Fantasy Baseball Beat and everything else is awesome, awesome stuff. Let's get into the White Sox 2026. But before we do that, what I ask every person here, what were your thoughts now 2025 went for the White Sox? Because honestly, it couldn't get much worse after 2024.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they won 41 games in 24. And I remember last winter when we were in Arizona, everybody was busting on me a little bit and saying, well, what do you think this year? And I said, well, I think they could win 60 games. I didn't have very lofty expectations, but there were definitely some glimmers of hope, I thought, last year as a fan and as a fantasy pundit, I guess you could say. There definitely is some stuff here that we should be taking notice of. And they do have a young core that's developing. It's not full yet, but they have a young core that's developing that is at least of interest in making the games watchable again. And as I said before we started recording, Bubba, I think this year they could approach mediocrity. I'm not looking for anything super crazy, but they won 60 games last year. If they could somehow add another 10 to that, I would be thrilled. I think that would be a step in the right direction for this team.
Yeah, that would be a definite step in the right direction. So let's get to it. 2026. We'll kick it off here with Lou Bob. Lou Bob is the guy that seemed like we thought would get traded last year. Many thought he'd get traded last year. That did not happen. It's like there's still rumors this year, but it feels quieter than in previous seasons, weirdly enough. He played 110 games. It's three straight years of at least 100, like small victories. We got that. 14 homers, 33 steals, which was amazing. He doesn't hit for average still. That's still a problem. ADP is around 130, though, over the last 10 or so drafts. So where are we at on Lou Bob right now? Because, like, the power is not maybe going to be the 30 home run guy we once saw, but the speed's pretty good. Average is a bit of a downer, though.
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at it as a tale of two halves for him, you know, the running game is really strong with him. He, even through injury last year, continued to run, you know. And so I think 30 steals are in play for him. The 300 average is not going to be, obviously. The strikeout rate has kind of crept up here over the last couple of years. And big swing and miss. And the power stroke just really has not been there, as you said, for the last couple of years. He did have 38 home runs 3 years ago, but I think that that time is over and done with. In terms of the rumors going on around him, you know, every week it seems that there's somebody's talking about the Mets or the Reds as being a potential partner for the White Sox and moving Robert. And it sounded like they were lining up with Cincinnati on a trade a few weeks back, but the Sox were asking for Chase Petty, among others, and they wanted that competitive balance pick because they're still rebuilding. And so they're trying to stockpile as many assets as they can. So I don't blame them for not trading him and just giving him away. If he comes out and hits a little bit at the beginning of the year and proves that he's healthy, he could rebuild that trade value very easily before the trade deadline. Because the other thing that we don't ever talk about in fantasy, now you and I talk about it a lot, but a lot of people don't talk about, is he is still a stellar defender in center field. And what if I told you, Bubba, that he's 28?
I mean, that's one thing. So young.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, we always have that saying, Ron Chandler, the godfather of all this stuff, right? You know, once you've displayed a skill, you own it. So he could surprise and do that again. He's got to make a lot more contact than what he's done, though. I think, you know, if he's going to settle in as that, you know, 14, 15 home run guy, 30 steals, maybe a 240 average and play defense. But the cost is baked in here, I think, now that the price is at that 130 ADP, like you're saying. And you know that he's not going to play 150 games. It's just not going to happen. And so if you get 110 games out of him, are you happy with him as your third outfielder? In a five, you know, if you're taking five outfielders, maybe number four, you know, you might be able to be surprised and get something good from him with that. I don't think that they're going to hit him third in the lineup anymore. I think roster resource is kind of onto that a little bit and have him looking in the six hole right there. I think that's more likely where he's going to be as well.
Yeah, you nailed, like, the biggest problem for me is where you have to pay for him and what you're going to get are two different things, it feels like. Like, playing time wise and all that, which makes it very tough for me because I love the skill set. There's always hope, as you mentioned. Once you portray a skill, you own right. A skill. There's a lot of optimism there. And would I be shocked if he came out of nowhere? No. Could he be a Byron Buxton this year? Of course. Mm-hmm. Like, the skills are there for that, especially with the better lineup around him than he's had probably in a long time. So there's a lot to be said about that too. I just don't think I'll be clicking that button. I'm a very cautious drafter. Doesn't always benefit me, mm-hmm. but I would be excited if it worked out. I'm just I'm cautiously pessimistic, I guess, is the word. I don't know how to say it properly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. Let's talk about the big signing that they made here. I'll probably butcher it. Munetaka Murakami is where I think. Yes. I think I'm in the ballpark there. Munetaka, yes. Murakami coming over from Japan, 26 this year. We got the power, a little bit of speed as well. Pretty good hit tool. Obviously, many have said, oh, I don't know if it'll translate, all this stuff. ADP is around 238. What's the buzz in Chicago? What are we expecting here?
There's a lot of buzz here, and there's a lot of hype. A lot of it good, and some of it is a split. I think everything you said is spot on. There's a lot of people here that are very concerned about the contact rate. You know, he's hovering 63-64% in Japan, which in the equivalency of our game is AAA pitching, essentially. But the one thing that you have to kind of consider is that he has 80 grade power, like legit 80 grade power. And if you've seen him swing a bat and make contact, this guy hits rockets. Now, am I going to sit here and tell you about another Japanese player that came over that people had doubts about, that if he was ever going to be able to hit here, who hits rockets 440 feet the other way? There's a guy who does that right now in the major leagues. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of him. Mr. Otani. I'm not saying he's like that. There's nobody that's like Otani. He's the freak of all freaks, the captain of all captains, right? But Murakami does have great power. And the White Sox, it didn't cost them much to find out if he's any good, right? I mean, $17 million a year is not a lot of, like, for you and me, that's a lot of money. But in the game of baseball, that's really not that much to find out. I could see a scenario where he comes out and does really well. The White Sox are very excited to market a Japanese player here. We've had some success in the past with Japanese players coming to the White Sox and making good contributions. Tadahito Oguchi is one that really kind of comes to mind, helping them win the World Series in 2005, which was only 21 years ago now. I think it's going to be great. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does. I think that, you know, if you look at the roster resource, like you and I both do a lot, people are really splitting on him. I've seen some people say 28% strikeout rate. You can live with that if you hit 30 home runs. A 37% strikeout rate with this lineup already could be a disaster. And so I think we'll see what happens, and he's going to come here and adjust. I know that the White Sox team is already – the management's already working with him on, you know, philosophy and what they want him to be trying to do. But this guy could really hit the ball hard when he hits it, and I'm hoping that's going to carry over here. There's not going to be a lot of pressure on him, and probably going to bat a little bit lower in the lineup until he gets comfortable. And if he hits, you know, he'll bat higher up. Of course, my friend and your friend, Tim McLeod, I asked him about the – hey, you know, I'm hearing a lot of things about Schwarber Light, you know, which would be thrilling as a White Sox fan. Please don't tell me that he's Joey Gallo Light. And so I think that remains to be seen. But it felt like a very low-risk signing. And quite honestly, I wasn't that surprised, because there had been some rumors going around that the Sox were kind of on the back end of it, waiting for the contract numbers to kind of come down, because people were projecting he was going to get a 5 or 6 year contract at 30 per, and the White Sox are never going to do that. Not with this ownership team. And so they kind of were laying in the weeds, and they got him. And so I think it's a really nice addition when you consider that Ryan O'Hearn went for about the same amount of money, and there's quite a bit more upside here with Murakami than there is with O'Hearn. In my opinion, I like that signing a lot for the White Sox.
Now, do you think Murakami does move to first base, kind of how they've all said, or is okay?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The word on the street right off the bat was that they were going to play him at first base, and Miguel Vargas really wants to play third base, even though he's a great team guy and will play anywhere. He played four different positions for them last year. He really is better at third base, they think, and if they just leave him alone, they feel really good about that, and I actually feel pretty good about that too. So Murakami is penciled in as the first baseman. We'll talk a little bit about DH later on. There's some stuff going on there too.
For sure. All right, let's talk about catching, because that's what I love to do. And Kyle Teal is a guy that I like a lot. Came over in the Crochet deal, is one of the bigger pieces in that deal. 8 homers, 3 steals, 78 games at .273. He's hit for average with some power and speed throughout every step of the minors. ADP's 187. He's like a primary catcher too for me, or a late catcher one if you missed out. What are your thoughts here on Teal? Because I guess is there a concern that he doesn't get the full run? Like, he seems like the catcher one, but there's Caro and there's other things involved.
Yeah, that's a really great question, Bubba, and very astute of you to point out, because I think there's a lot of misinformation that's out there about what's going on with the setup, from what I can tell. So I think Teal came up in June, like you said, and he was immediately inserted into the starting lineup. I mean, they did not mess around. He was batting low in the order, and he showed right away that he had good strike zone judgment and was able to handle the bat. And they hit him in the 2 spot, which is where I think he's going to hit this year. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you. I think he's going to play 120 games behind the plate easily. I think what he showed last year was that he was really good against righties and needs a little bit of work against lefties. So his OPS plus against righties was 115, against lefties was 78. Cuero, who we'll talk about a little bit later, is the exact opposite of that. So I think Cuero will start behind the plate a lot against lefties. But Cuero is also going to be the primary DH, if that makes any sense. Now, to combat that, the White Sox will probably keep Corey Lee as their third catcher, because they don't really have a lot of bench depth anyway, and they've been accumulating these guys that can do a variety of different things, like none of them well. You know, Sosa can kind of play around. Everson Pereira, who they just picked up, is a guy that can play all 3 outfield spots. So they might be able to go a little bit shorter on their bench and keep that third catcher so that they can keep both Cuero and Teal's bats in the lineup. Now that that question is answered, I think this is a guy, and I know you feel the same way, this is a guy that could easily hit .260, .270, 15 to 20 home runs, 10 steals is in play. I really think so. If he plays 120 games and he stays healthy, I think he's going to do that. He's got great gap to get power. The other thing about him that's really important is I really felt in watching you, you're a former catcher. I'm a former catcher. Watching him play, he commanded that team. He's in charge. He's the guy. And so already at the age of 23, he's already commanding that level of respect from the veterans and the young guys. He knows what he's doing. He's a good ball player. And so I think where he's going in drafts, I love him as my number two catcher. I think in really deep leagues, I would be willing to take the plunge with him as the number one catcher. I am not worried about playing time for Kyle Teal at all, because not only does he have those good that good spot there in the lineup and what he does, and does he know what he's doing? And if we look at those things, he's the better catcher. Cuero's got a better arm than he does and picks guys off, which is sexy, and everybody likes that. But Teal is the better catcher. He's the better guy with the pitching staff. The pitchers are said to prefer to throw to him. I think he's going to play 120 games easily and would be a good return on your investment at that ADP.
Yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page there. I think there's a lot to like there. I call him like he's my Goose Light, my Agustin Light. Better batting average, a little less power and speed, I think, than Goose, but a lot later in drafts as well. I'm going to jump to Edgar Caro right now, since we were just talking about him, because I agree. Like, he's the switch hitter. He's got a good hit tool, not a ton of power showcase, but hey, maybe that comes along. Who knows? Again, these guys are all super young, so a lot can change.
Right.
But Edgar Caro's ADP is 351. Like, is there a world where he catches versus left-handed pitching, plays enough DH, where at 351, that can play as a catcher too?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think Cuero, like you said, I told about the split of the OPS plus for Teal. For Cuero, lefties, 121. So you're taking and kind of Frankensteining a catcher statistic there, right? So, but I think what's going to happen is, I think he actually is going to hit for a better average than Teal, but the power will be slightly less. So he's got a high contact rate. He had 79% contact rate as a 21-year-old rookie in Major League Baseball. That's pretty darn good, last I checked. I think he's going to get you 8 to 10 home runs. He's going to knock in some runs. The ground ball percentage was a little high last year, but I kind of attribute that to learning on the job. You know, he's still learning how to catch and still learning how to hit. Now, this is a guy that was the centerpiece of that trade back out to Los Angeles a couple years ago when they moved Lucas Giolito, was the kind of the centerpiece of that trade for the Angels when they inexplicably tried to make the playoffs. And we got Cuero out of the deal. I shouldn't say we. I'm not on the team. The White Sox got Cuero out of the deal. And I think that they remain very high on him. There had been some talk in the offseason that Teal was going to move to the outfield and they were going to move Benintendi and Cuero would catch full time. I don't think that's the plan. I think the White Sox have professed under Chris Getz and the guys that are running the farm system there that they want to be strong up the middle. You do that by having a good catcher. You do that by having a good middle infield combination. We're going to talk about both of those guys too. And Robert, even if he's not hitting, is a really strong defender and center. So they're kind of building from the inside out. You know, like you hear that in football all the time, right? Guys talk about you got to build the line first and you build off the ball from there. The Sox are trying to do the same thing. They're trying to follow that blueprint and get some guys that they can just plug and play with up the middle and just go. And Teal's definitely going to be part of that group. I'm super excited. I still can't believe that the Sox got him for Crochet, because you remember, I'm a White Sox fan through and through. And when the Sox got Yoan Moncada and Michael Kopech back in the Chris Sale trade, we all felt like that was a little light because we really wanted Rafael Devers and the White Sox wanted Rafael Devers too. And the Red Sox were smart enough not to make that move. And you see how well that trade worked out for the White Sox. It didn't at all. So to get Teal, who is a blue blood catcher, a real catcher, guy who knows what he's doing, see him play in person. It's really fun, and it's got me excited, if you can't tell, about the future for this team.
I love it. Absolutely love it. All right, let's go back to that middle infield here. Let's talk Chase Mydroth, who you mentioned last year as a guy that might come up before Colson Montgomery. We'll get to him in a minute. Mm-hmm. So you and Mydroth is pretty much there from day one outside of some injuries, but over 122 games at 253, 5 homers, 14 steals. Finished the season with on a high note, especially in the steals department. Really love what we're getting from him. ADP 336, potentially leadoff guy for Chicago. I've been taking a lot of draft champion shares of Chase Mydroth just because of the price tag alone. He might not be a world beater, but I think there's a lot to like in 15-team leagues from Mydroth. You can tell me I'm right or wrong or whatever you choose here.
No, I love him. I mean, I think we run across guys like this all the time, right? Where you see him play, like I saw him play in spring training, and I'm like, that guy just knows how to play baseball. Like, you know, you just did the eye test, right? What everybody talks about. He's probably a better baseball player in real life than he is a fantasy player, but he's got a lot of, I'd be interested to hear what you think about this. He's got a lot of shades of Caleb Durbin to me at a lower price, right? Like,
that's good talk.
Guy that might hit 10 home runs if he gets lucky, but it's going to steal a ton of bases. He's also batting leadoff on an improving team. So he's going to have Teal batting behind him, probably Colson Montgomery, and then Vargas, Robert Benintendi, somewhere in that order, Murakami. Like, he could score a ton of runs, you know? And so I think where he's going, and second base, you know, second base to me is a weird position this year. There are times where I look at it and I'm like, oh, second base is really good. And then there's other times I'm like, Mike, what are you thinking? Like, second base is like a barren cesspool of, you know, wasteland, right? But if you got a guy like Mydroth as a bench piece or as a middle infielder, I think you could do a heck of a lot worse. Like, I mean, I'd rather have him than a lot of guys that are going higher than him at this point. And so I think he's going to play a lot too. I think he's going to hit leadoff. He's got the second base and shortstop eligibility in the NFBC, which I think is really big as well. I think he definitely could score 80 plus runs. Now, the one caveat to all this is we don't know what they're doing with Lenin Sosa. Lenin Sosa is a natural second baseman, the same way that I'm a natural pitcher. He's terrible at second base. They should really just tell him to leave his glove at home. I mean, Bubba, I saw him, one thing happen to him that I've never seen in a Major League Baseball game in my whole life. Can I tell you about it quickly?
Yes, go for it.
The catcher was throwing down after the 8-pitch warm-up, and the ball hit Sosa right in the face. I've never seen that happen before. But it didn't, like, skim his glove or anything. He didn't even touch it. He wasn't paying any – he was covering second base on the throwdown, and he wasn't even looking. I'm like, what is this guy doing? This is like – this is – like, even my high school kids don't do that, you know? Where Sosa ends up, I mean, he's got a good bat. We know that. But I don't know where he's going to end up playing. And I don't think he's going to supplant Mydroth. And I don't think Mydroth is moving to third. I think he's their second baseman until Antonacci or, you know, one of those guys might come up and give him a run for his money at some point. But Mydroth is a really nice player. In fact, when the White Sox got him in the Crochet trade, there were a lot of people that were telling me out on the East Coast, Eric Cross being one of them, that they would not be surprised at all if he was a day one starter. And he almost was. They waited a couple weeks to bring him up, but he's got nothing left to prove in AAA. He's their starting second baseman and their leadoff guy.
Yep, I love it. Could score 80 plus runs. Going to be beautiful right there. You mentioned Lenin Sosa. Let's just get after it. I loved him last year at his price tag. It paid off hitting .264 with 22 homers. But like you said, there's kind of no room at the end right now for Lenin Sosa. His ADP's 300, and I don't know as an outsider where he's going to play. You might have a better input. You sounds like you don't really have a feel for it either, because there's nowhere for him to really go unless they start moving and shaking a lot. But at ADP 300, is there a world where Lenin Sosa is serviceable?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, right? So we've talked about Quero getting a lot of the DH spot at bats. Sosa was scheduled, I think, to play first base more before they signed Murakami. I could see a situation in which Murakami DHs some days and maybe Sosa's playing first base, but he's not really any good there either. It's always kind of baffling to me how many people that you posted that video the other day of how they were trying to teach, I don't remember who the player was, but to play first base with the footwork. Do you remember that? Polanco, yeah.
It's absolutely horrific. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
I mean, Jorge Polanco looks like Keith Hernandez next to Lenin Sosa. I mean, it's just, it's really bad, really bad. And so I think that they might try to find a way to DH him. But, you know, you can't deny that in the second half last year, he was a great pickup for a lot of teams and helped a lot of people win. He had a ton of home runs down the stretch. I mean, he ended up with 22 home runs, .264 batting average. The power's legit. But a 3% walk rate? Are you kidding me? Like, how is that even possible? You know, he's swinging from, you know, from the bottom of his feet every time he's up there. So there's been some talk about him playing right field, but I don't see that necessarily being a possibility. I still think the White Sox are looking for pieces to add there. I mean, we talked a little bit off the air, you know, Austin Hayes or Michael Conforto, somebody like that, that could maybe give them some leadership and some at bats, and then they could possibly move if they're any good in the first half of the season. But right now, I think Sosa's kind of a utility guy and kind of a bench guy. I mean, you don't really want him playing in the field, and the bat is good, but are you going to bench, are you going to bench Quero or Murakami to get Sosa in there? And here's the thing, Sosa's 25. It's not like he's like a 35-year-old guy that you could just jettison. He's a young guy too. So it remains to be seen how they're going to use him. And it's been pretty quiet around here in terms of how they're talking about using him at all.
Yeah, no, I'm baffled by it. I get if he can't play defense, it's going to be hard to find you a spot. That's for sure. He produced last year in the 25-year-old thing. It's like, trade him then. Find something for him. Like, he's still so young. Someone will take a chance on him. So I'm curious to see where that the dust settles on Lennon Sosa, because just having him be a bench bat, which is where everything points right now, seems very odd at this point in time. Colson Montgomery, 23-year-old last year, 21 home runs, hit .239, 30%, near 30% K rate. ADP's .241, which it shows you, I guess, Mike, how much smarter drafters are these days, because they would have saw that run of 21 homers last year, and he would have been a really high draft pick. .241 seems a little more reasonable, but I'm still terrified of that swing and miss. What's your thoughts with Colson Montgomery?
Yeah, terrifying is a good word for it. It seems like a high wire act, you know. He did have an impressive season, like you said, a slew of home runs, slew of contact issues, 63% contact rate. That is not survivable unless you're going to hit 40 home runs. When we had Scott Merkin on from MLB.com, you know, friend of our show on the Fantasy Baseball Beat, he told me right away that Montgomery is a guy who loves the big stage and will thrive when he gets to the major leagues. And I said, well, we haven't really seen him thrive at any level. He's battled a lot of injuries, a lot of swing and miss. He goes, this guy is going to be something else. In fact, Merkin went on record last week and said that he's predicting 40 home runs for Montgomery this year. Now, if he hits 40 home runs, that ADP is long gone, right? But it's not going to cost you too much to find out, right? I mean, you're already going to have your first shortstop by the time you draft Montgomery. He's either going to be a middle infield bat for you or a utility bat for you. But he's got elite bat speed, Bubba. I don't know if people realize that. Like, he's got a 77-mile-per-hour swing rate. It's just crazy to think about how hard he's swinging. Now, they're going to learn how to pitch him a little bit differently, but if anybody tries to go middle in on him, it's going out. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Like, people are not going to make that mistake with him this year. But he's got a 14.5% barrel rate, too. I mean, so when he hits the ball, he hits it hard. Now, he's got to get that contact rate up. You could see a scenario where he comes out and really struggles, and they send him down, you know, and they bump Mydroth over to shortstop, and they put Sosa at second base or whatever, or, you know, call up Antonacci, or, you know, Caleb Bonnemer is a big prospect for them, but he's still pretty young. I don't know how that's all going to work out, but I have some of the same concerns that you do. Like, I kind of want to see him do it again, because he hit home runs in bunches last year. I mean, there was a week or two there where he had a home run like almost like every other day. I was just going crazy and punishing mistakes. They have him listed as the three hitter right now, and I just don't know. That's the one thing that I'm still a little leery of. I feel like I've, even at age 23, that I feel like I don't want to say that I've been burned by Montgomery, but that I still don't really know exactly what he is yet. And I'd like to see a growth year before I'm going to sink a high pick into him. But at this ADP, it's not going to cost you much to find out. And quite honestly, a lot of guys in this range are guys that you end up dropping anyway for somebody else that's hotter and more helpful. So if you can stomach the K rate and you feel that he's got 30 home run power, he's a good deal there. We don't care about strikeouts in fantasy. We care about bombs.
Yeah, I'm with you. And trust me, he helped me a ton in a couple of fab leagues where I was able to get him last year, and we made it work. The ADP is much more palatable. I don't have any shares yet, but this is why I love doing all these shows, talking out all the players, is when you sit back, look at it in a vacuum for the upside at that price. I get it now. I get it. Mm-hmm. At first, like, no, we're not doing this dance. A lot of concerns with Colson Montgomery. There still could be, as you said, there's a lot of learning to be done still with Montgomery, but the power is undeniable. It was amazing. Like you mentioned, that streak that he was going on for a while there was insane. It was great because I loved it. Ryan hated it, so it made for great theater around these parts. It was very, very good.
Well, Ryan's going to hate what happens to Oregon this weekend, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, trust me. We got stuff in store for a Tuesday night show for that one. Yes,
Can't wait.
Miguel Vargas, you mentioned him. He came over from the Dodgers a couple years ago. Last year, 16 homers, 6 steals to go with a .234 average. Again, another guy. He's only going to be 26 this year, super young. A player that was a big-time prospect for the Dodgers. There's no room for him to play. They found a home for him now. ADP's 278. I think there's a ton to like at this price tag.
I'll tell you, he's one of my favorite players on the team, both as a fan and as a fantasy player, because I think all he's done is persevere. You know, when he came from the Dodgers to the White Sox, he appeared in the dugout like somebody had run over his dog. You know, he just looked sullen and completely downcast. And he talked about that last year, about how difficult it was, not so much going from a winner to a loser, but having a team give up on him. You know, he felt like he never really got a chance in Los Angeles. And when the White Sox let him play, he does hit a ton of fly balls. But if he can turn some of those fly balls into some harder hit, you know, he hits the ball pretty hard when he hits it. I think this is a guy that is kind of laying in the weeds a little bit. You know, he had 100 WRC plus last year. So a lot of people are going to pass over him and look at the batting average and think that maybe he's just not very good. But where he's going, I think he can grow the power more. He's going to play third base. They're going to leave him alone. He's going to have third base and first base eligibility. Again, at this point of the draft, you've already taken your third baseman and your first baseman. So you're taking him as, you know, a flyer, essentially, or as a corner or utility guy. And quite honestly, there is some, you know, he's played the outfield before too. And so if they end up moving Benintendi, or if they decide to, you know, if something happens and they decide to put him in the outfield, he'll get outfield eligibility for you as well. He's going to hit 20 home runs this year, and he's going to steal 10 bases, and he's going to hit better than .234. And I'll put my hat on that. I mean, I think he definitely is a guy that is growing, and he's a team player, which I loved. I mean, they needed him at first base last year. He said, okay, I'll learn. He did it. He never complained. He just went out there and kept playing. Big smile on his face. The guys seem to like him. I think he's going to hit cleanup in this lineup right now, Bubba, the way that it's set up. And so I like the idea of taking him here, and I hope that he explodes and just shoves it in everyone's face, because it would be great, because there's been so many people just crapping all over this guy for years. I would just love to see him become a really good regular.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's going to go full Michael Busch, but Michael Busch was also just kind of thrown away Dodgers prospect who has completely figured it out on the opposite side of Chicago.
Exactly.
And so it'd be good to see Var. I'm with you. Like, I'm rooting for him. I think that's why I was heavily interested in him the last couple of years once he went all sweet playing time. But again, young kid, you mentioned the stuff that you heard about his struggles and dealing. Baseball, there's a lot more than a Fangraphs page, folks, with what's going on there. So, yeah, that's great to hear. And he's so young. The talent's there. We know that.
Tap into
it. Even on a quote unquote down season, dude scored 80 runs. Like, that's be thrown away in the mix. So
yeah, I mean, that's huge, right? Yeah. It's huge that he did that. And here's the thing too, like, during the year, he talked a lot in the paper and on the radio about like changes that he was making to his swing as he was learning. So like, he's not just going up there and doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the same results. Like, when he went into a bad slump and he was like 1-for-23, 1-for-24, he was like, I got to stay consistent. I'm going to do this. And he changed the way he was swinging and what he was trying to do. You know, the White Sox, the minor league system is preaching this message of improving contact, right? Like, having a plan of attack and going up there and not just swinging for the fences, but like gap to gap, knowing game situations. They finally are putting together the infrastructure that's been missing in this organization since I was a child, essentially, which is a really, really long time ago, because I am really, really old, as you know. And so I hope that that's what's really happening here. And I think that he is a great student of that. I would love to just see him go off this year. Like, I don't think he's going to hit 30 home runs, but if he did, I would be ecstatic for him.
Yeah, just give me 20 to 25 and let the rest of their chips follow. I think it'll be really good stuff for Miguel Vargas. You mentioned Benny Biceps. Andrew Benintendi could be a trade target, which makes sense because he is definitely the elder statesman of this crew. He'll be 31 this year, but it's a new hitter. We know he's not going to hit for a great average. .240 was totally fine last year, but back-to-back 20 home run seasons, does his thing. Only played 116 games last year, but you know, for a guy that you can get with an ADP of 417, especially in a DC,
yeah,
I see no issues.
No, either. I mean, seriously, you hit the nail right on the head, Bubba. He's 100 WRC plus, 20 home runs, 60 RBIs, not going to hit for a high average anymore. He did sell out, quote unquote, for power. I don't know, selling out for 20 home runs, but for years, nobody could decide what he was. You know, when he first started, it was always double-digit home run, double-digit steals. That's great. He hit 280. And then it was no home runs, but he's hitting 300 and he's stealing some bases. And now he is what he is. The White Sox would love somebody to take him off their hands. They still owe him another $30 million for the next 2 years. And for those of you that are keeping track of trivia, Benintendi has the highest contract in the history of the White Sox ever, 5 years at $75 million. That's the biggest free agent contract the White Sox have ever given out in their history, which is pathetic and putrid at the same time. I think they would love to move him. I think if he got off to a decent start, they probably could move him for something. But I like what you said. You know, as long as your expectations are he's your fifth outfielder or you're drafting him to be on your bench in a DC or something of that nature, I think that he's a fine guy to have. I would not bank on him having any return to former glory. And at 31, he is the oldest guy in the lineup by, about 6 years. So I think that I take that back. Robert's 28, but most of the other guys are 24, 25. I don't think that they would mind moving on from him if somebody was willing to take him.
All right. Before we head to the mound, anybody else worth discussing? I think we already hit on Lennon Sosa, Corey Lee in a roundabout way. You got Brooks Baldwin, Pereira. Anybody else worth discussing for fantasy?
Yeah, Baldwin's not a bad guy. I mean, I think he's going to platoon, but they like him. I mean, he's shown some ability to be able to hit the ball pretty hard, and he's got some speed. So Baldwin right now is penciled in as the everyday right fielder. I think that they would prefer to use him as a utility guy. He can play a little bit of third. He can play a little bit of second base, shortstop in a pinch if they needed it. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think that he's going to be a starter. I think that they're going to still sign somebody at low bargain basement type of bin there. Couple of minor league guys that could be interesting. You know, Sam Antonacci, you and I saw him play in Arizona. That guy looks like a ball player to me. Hit the ball, hit a home run, stole a base, got into a verbal altercation with Kevin McGonigal while we were there. I think he's somebody that kind of came seemingly out of nowhere. He's definitely a second baseman. He's not a shortstop based on what we saw there. And then another guy that's in the minors that could end up coming at some point who's moved right up the ranks of their prospects is Caleb Bonimer. He's a third baseman. He's still pretty young and working on the hit tool, but he really looks like a guy that is going to be able to help them sooner than later. In terms of other bats, they're kind of bereft. I mean, they have their best minor league bats playing in the major leagues last year. And so Brian Ramos is a guy that could get another bit of an opportunity. Who is
don't bring me back in on him, please. Don't scare.
No. I don't think you want to be in on him, but you're just asking about other guys to know. Yeah. Ramos could be a guy that's got a chance in there. Curtis Meade, the former Tampa Bay Ray, who that's never really much of a chance. He could end up playing some third base. He's also only 25. The Rays gave up on him, which makes you think that maybe he's not any good. But the White Sox have at-bats to be able to give him. So those are guys that I think just to know in the back of your mind that could get some time. Meade could also – he plays both the corners and second base too. So they got a lot of those kind of jack-of-all-trades, master or none type of guys right now.
Yeah, I like the Curtis Meade shout. He actually had some good run towards the end of last season with injuries. And he was once like a pretty high up prospect thought with the Rays. So I'm curious to see how that pans out.
I guess Brayden Montgomery, you know, I don't think he's going to make it this year. There's a lot of people are split on that. He's still got some time that he's got to develop. He's not ready, I don't think. But, you know, people believe what they want to believe. But I don't think he's going to be up this year.
Yeah, it seems like he's a year or two away still.
Agreed.
We'll see, though. We will see. Let's head to the mound where your ace of the staff, love it or hate it, is a Rule 5 pick from last year in Shane Smith, who
threw
146 innings, sub-4 ERA, like did just enough of everything right to stick in that rotation. ADP's 274, which, you know, when you're looking for volume as the draft goes on, I'm a fan. I don't know what the ceiling is for Shane Smith, but I think he's going to be out there every fifth day barring an injury. So what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the perfect world, he's probably a number three starter on a decent team. On this team, he's their ace. as it's set up right now, which doesn't say much. But can we talk a little bit real quickly about the success that the White Sox have had in the Rule 5 draft? I mean, last year, their two of their best pitchers, Shane Smith and Mike Vassell, who was out of the bullpen, were both Rule 5 guys. They have the perfect opportunity for those guys to go in and exist. And then what happens is the guy who's running our programming here, or the White Sox programming, I'm not on the team. I have to keep reminding myself that. It's a guy that you're familiar with, Bubba, from his time in San Francisco, and that's Brian Bannister. Yep. And Brian Bannister teaches this idea of, hey, get ground balls. You don't have to strike everybody out. You know, there's not a lot of swing and miss on this rotation right now. And Smith's got a little bit of that. You know, maybe a little bit more than some of the other brethren that are in the rotation, but they've had success with those guys. They had success with Adrian Hauser last year off the scrap heap. And what they do is they go back and they teach these guys. It's sort of like what the Rays used to do. They'll be like, hey, here's video of when you were good. We're going to go back to the time when you were good, and we're going to look at your pitch shapes, and we're going to figure out another way to kind of work through this and like get you back to what you're doing well and make you feel confident again. It sounds like a really, you know, nice concept, but the Sox have done a really nice job with that. So I think Smith, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. I don't predict any of these guys really. I think a lot of them are going to throw 150 innings, maybe 10, 11 wins at the most if they can get there. You're not drafting White Sox pitchers for wins. You might be able to get a decent strikeout rate. I mean, his strikeout rate last year was almost 9, and he did show some propensity to be able to get maybe some more strikeouts. But the other thing is that's going to be hard is that with him being their number one starter, he's going to be pitching against other teams' aces. So coming up with wins is going to be hard for Shane Smith. But I like the stuff. I like the repertoire, the stuff that he's doing with it.
Yep, I'm with you, and I love the Vassell comment as well. We talked about him on the bullpen show, and there's a lot of optimism there. Now, for the listeners, this is in no specific order except going on roster resources list. So, Mike, go as deep or as shallow as you want on any of these guys. Davis Martin is penciled in at number 2. You mentioned him last year as a guy that might get some run, and he got 25 starts, 142 and two-thirds innings. Mm-hmm. Strikeouts were pretty much non-existent, but, again, another guy just got 8 the innings, didn't get completely destroyed. Like, yeah. What are our thoughts on Martin?
Yeah, he was, you know, he had the Tommy John surgery 2 years ago, and there was a lot of question about what they were going to get out of him or how they were going to use him last year. And he being sort of the elder statesman of the group at 29, I think they just threw him out there and said, here, eat innings. So he's not going to get a lot of strikeouts. He did have a 4.10 ERA, 7 wins, a little bit of a high whip at 1.29. His xERA was not super great either. You know, he's a kind of a changeup heavy pitcher. Fastball is not great. I think he's like a 4 or 5 for them, but he takes the ball every fifth day, like you said, and it didn't get shellacked. But he's a ground ball pitcher who relies on good defense. And he had a little bit better second half last year because of the fact that Montgomery and Meidroth were playing up the middle and they settled on, you know, some better defense there than what they had been getting. So Martin's okay. I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to get him or anything, but he's another one of these high ground ball rate kind of guys, but not a real big K guy, not a big ratio help either.
All right, let's talk about Sean Burke, another younger guy, 26 years old, 134 innings last year. Strikeouts weren't bad. Like in the minors, he was really, really strong in the strikeout world. It's more the walks, 10.6% K rate to offset the 22.3% walk rate to offset the 22.3% K rate. And again, he had a couple rough starts, but as a whole, 4.22 ERA. He can live with these things when you're the White Sox. And in fantasy, when you're the ADP you're looking at on a Sean Burke is 4.91. Again, a guy I'm not running to get, but in a DC, similar to Shane Smith, he's going out there and he actually has strikeout stuff that I think resembles, if not might be better than Shane Smith.
Yeah, so you got a guy here that's was a high draft pick for the White Sox. They took him knowing that he was hurt. They drafted him in the third round, I think 21 or 22, somewhere in there. He's 6'6". He gets 7 foot of extension. The guy can bring it. So there is some potential for strikeouts here. As you pointed out, Bubba, people might not realize it, but he had a 31% strikeout rate in the second half last year. Now, granted, that came with a 155 whip, which is not great, but the ERA was 386, 53 strikeouts in 37 innings down the stretch. He had a couple games where he had 8 or 9 strikeouts. He is the guy of this current group that I have the highest hope for in terms of there being some ceiling. Like, I mean, I think we know Smith is pretty safe what the floor is. We know what Martin's floor is. But this is a guy where he's going in drafts that I think might not be a bad spec pick, and see what he gets to. He has not pitched a lot at all in the minor leagues or in the major leagues. You know, he came up in 24. He made three starts at the end that were pretty impressive, and the Sox kind of handed him that role last year and didn't manage him too badly. I mean, he got 134 innings out of the deal. I think he's going to shoot past that this year, and I think he could get you 150 strikeouts if he throws 150 innings, quite honestly.
I love that, because I lost a beer bet to Ryan last year, Burke versus Smith, and they both had a two-step 1 week, and Burke was doing okay, then he's got shelled one inning in the second start, mm-hmm. just completely ruined it. But yeah. I like the upside with Burke as well. So I'm with you. Again, it happens a lot with these like central teams or these kind of like 500-ish teams. They're going to be very affordable plays that you could take chances on. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Mm-hmm. I think Sean Burke, I like the idea. Like late in a draft, he's one of your last picks in a fab league, let alone he's like your 10th or 11th starting pitcher, potentially, maybe 9th starting pitcher in a DC, which that gives you legs at times. Mm-hmm. All right. This one I want all of your help on, of course, is Anthony Kay coming over from the mm-hmm. MPB. Spent 2 years over there. Ratios are good, especially last year. Strikeouts still not an elite strikeout arm. 20% K rate, which is good. But how do we see this transitioning back to the White Sox? They brought him in to start, obviously, because that's what he was doing overseas. ADP's mm-hmm. 550. You think this translates at all?
Well, again, I go back to the idea that the White Sox have had some success with this. I mean, a couple years ago, they brought back Eric Fetty, and then they moved him before the league figured out what he was doing different, right? And so Fetty put together a really nice three quarters of a season for the Sox before they moved him. I really think that it's kind of in that same realm. You know, they needed a lefty in the rotation. They didn't have one. Martin and Smith and Burke are all right-handed. So I think that they're kind of buying into the same formula. He actually almost got exactly the same kind of contract as well that they gave to Fetty. And so I think they're willing to let him, again, they're willing to let him have a little bit of a run. He changed some of the stuff that he was doing there and his pitch mix a little bit. And really worked on his command. I mean, his command just became so much better there. I really do think that the Sox, again, saw something here. He had better offers from other teams. He had better offers to stay in Japan, but he wanted to come back stateside. And so I think that Bannister's got a plan for him, too. Again, heavy ground ball guy. They're not going to rely on guys that are going to come in and pump fastballs and blow people away, which also could be a recipe for disaster. But he wants to be a starter. They're going to give him an opportunity to do that. And who knows? They're going to fall out of contention relatively quickly again. And if he's good over 5 or 6 or 7, 8 starts, you know, maybe they look to move him too, see what they can get for him. I think that's the method of the madness with the White Sox all the time. You know, they spend this money on these free agents, Murakami notwithstanding. I mean, I think that's a different setup. But, you know, Fetty and now Kay and bringing in these guys on very low risk contracts and then moving somebody. They did that with Hauser too, right? Like they got something for him, even if it's not something that's like a star player. They're rebuilding their franchise, right? So they find these guys, they change them, they trade them before anybody else figures out, and then they go someplace else and then they suck again. And the White Sox actually got two players out of the deal, you know? So I don't really know how to project him exactly. I always struggle with that, but I know Tim McLeod, when I had reached out to him, said he felt like this was a good signing for the White Sox and that Kay was going to come back and be successful here. And that he was going to win some games and he was going to keep the ball down and not get a ton of strikeouts, but that he'd be a good ratio helper. And so I'm going to go with Tim on that one.
Good to know. ADP 550. Keep that in mind, folks. All right. I'll leave this one open for you, Mike. They picked up Sean Newcomb, you know, once was a heralded starter potentially for the Braves, then turned reliever. Now he's going back into the rotation. Is it Newcomb? Is it someone else? Is anything worth looking into with the rest of the White Sox rotation?
You know, I think that they have a couple of ideas about what they might be able to do in terms of that fifth starter. I know that Newcomb came here to Chicago because they had sort of promised him that he would get a look in the rotation, but he was just so good in the bullpen last year. I would be surprised if he didn't end up in the bullpen. The White Sox could really use, a left-handed guy in the bullpen besides what they already have, which is Brandon Eisert. He's really the only other lefty that they have right now. But I think that Newcomb will kind of get a crack at it. I just don't know if he's going to stick there. The Sox have got a couple other guys in the minor leagues that a lot of people have heard about. And I think, you know, we know that Noah Schultz, who's one of the top left-handed prospects in the game. They also have Hagen Smith. And I've seen some people speculating that Smith might be better as a closer. I don't know that they're actually actively moving towards that. But Schultz and Smith should be ready at some point this year to make at least a handful of starts up in the major leagues. The White Sox do have a couple of other guys that might get a chance as well. Tanner McDougal is a big right-hander. He's only 22. They got Duncan Davitt, who is another guy that they got from Tampa, actually in the Hauser trade, I believe. And they're fairly high on him and think that he could eat some innings for them. Jonathan Cannon is another guy that had some run with them and did not do very well last year. Another one of these big guys, but doesn't throw very hard and doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. So you could see any of those guys get an opportunity. It would not surprise me at all if, you know, we get to the middle of May and they decide to give Schultz or Smith a chance. But I don't think, you know, the fifth starter on the White Sox is not a real appealing position right now. They do have some guys in the bullpen I know we'll talk about that could be of interest to fantasy players. But leaving it at that with the rotation, I think, is smart.
Yeah, for the people out there, Schultz, ADP 661. Hagen Smith, 678. So those aren't costing you much of anything right now. And those are the Tanner McDougal, 641. So you got those ones sitting out there for you. All right, let's talk to one of the bullpen gurus here. Let's get after it. We talked about it with you and Rick Graham a couple weeks back. But Jordan Leisier, I call it Leisure Time. Looked really nice when he got the shot there. They got Grant Taylor, who's a flamethrower, but they kind of already mentioned they want to keep him in longer relief, it feels like. Could be wrong. How do you – and I like Vassell, who you mentioned earlier. He got a couple saves last season.
Yeah.
How do you see this bullpen working out for fantasy right now?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because a lot of people that I've talked to are thinking that it's going to be Taylor as the closer, and I'm telling you it's going to be Leisier. And I would make a beer bet on that if anybody wanted to. I think that Leisier actually did a really nice job down the stretch with that. Again, they changed the shapes of his pitches a little bit. He had been – people might not remember, but 2 years ago before the real serious White Sox meltdown began, there were a lot of people that were very high on him becoming the closer right off the bat. And he went out there and got lit up, and it didn't go very well. And so he kind of rebuilt his repertoire a little bit and did a really nice job with the command the last year. And so down the stretch, he had six saves in the last like 6 weeks of the season. Obviously, when you only win 60 games, you don't have a ton of opportunities. But this is a growing team, and that bullpen, they've rebuilt the middle of that bullpen now, Bubba. So if Newcomb gets in there, as I expect, and Vassell is a huge ground ball guy, not a big strikeout guy, but had a great season for them last year. He threw over 100 innings out of the bullpen for them last year and served a variety of roles. He was an opener a couple of times. He did get a couple of saves as a closer. He's not a closer. He's a great sixth or seventh inning guy if you need to have somebody come in. And I really think that what they want to do with Taylor is they really want to work with him, too, on the command issue. The stuff is absurd. I mean, he's got a 13, you know, per nine K rate that he showed last year as a rookie. The flames are there. The stuff is there. A lot of the White Sox are pretty well known over the course of time for taking guys that they draft really high and putting them in the bullpen first and then developing them as starters, right? There was a guy named Mark Burley that you might remember a few years ago. He won a few major league games, then ended up going back into the rotation after being in the bullpen. They did the same thing with Sale. They did the same thing with Crochet. Now, granted, those guys are all lefties and Taylor's a righty. Taylor really wants to be in the rotation. The White Sox feel that he's a better use to them as a stopper in the bullpen. I could definitely see him being a guy who gets two inning, shots twice a week, and they just kind of baby him until they're ready to go into the rotation. Because what they're doing is they're building his confidence now for the future. Because at some point, that rotation could be Smith, McDougal, Schultz, Hagen Smith, and this guy, right? I mean, so they could have a serious, serious rotation sooner than people think if these guys continue to develop. And Taylor would be right in the middle of that mix too. So Vassell, Taylor, and Leisure should make up the bullpen. Leisure is the closer. I would bet money on that at this point. Brandon Eisner is their lefty. They also got some good stuff out of Weikelman Gonzalez last year, too, who was also part of the Garrett Crochet trade. So all four of those guys that the White Sox got in the Garrett Crochet trade quietly made contributions to the big league club last year. I really liked what I saw from Gonzalez. He's got a big strikeout arm too. He's also got a big walk percentage that he's got to fight through. And then they had two Rule 5 guys that are going to probably make the team in Alexander Alberto and Jadixon Perez, who both were pretty high prospects that were left unprotected in the Rule 5 draft. Both can throw absolute flame. And the other guy, Bubba, that we got to talk about here that is important is Prelander Baroa, who should be back at some point. Yep. He had the Tommy John in March of last year, and so they're saying that they think he might be ready late May, early June, which would add another mix into that bullpen. So they're getting some guys that can throw absolute cannon shot in that bullpen. And if they get Baroa back, they could have a really good bullpen. I mean, I think people are – probably not going to believe me right now until they see it, but with Vassell, Taylor, Baroa, and Leisure closing it out, they could be really, really tough at the end of games.
Yeah, and having that kind of depth in the bullpen also definitely helps this rotation, which we said can be serviceable, but I think we're realistic. Most of them aren't going too deep. Like if you get six innings, you're pumped. It's like five or six innings probably for most of these guys. And that's all. Yeah. So if you get that bullpen depth, it actually makes things interesting in Chicago. Like you can actually have some
running. Yeah. Yeah. Last year they did some stuff with manipulating those guys a little bit, right? You know, like the not saying that a guy was injured or whatever, but they sent him down to the minors because he was ineffective and then they just shut him down for 2 weeks. You know, I think that there's gonna be some manipulation that's gonna happen with these guys again this year to try to keep them fresh so that they don't run out of gas down the stretch like they did the last couple of years.
All righty. Any other prospects? We went through most of them. I think I just want to make sure we don't miss anything before we head out.
No, I think that's all I got for you. I mean, here's the thing, right? So 2 years ago at this time, we had about a 20-minute conversation, and then just were kind of riffing on stuff. We had a full hour of conversation about my beloved Chicago White Sox tonight and some guys that might be able to help our fantasy friends find some value in these drafts. Where a lot of these guys are going, they're pretty good value picks, I think, Bubba.
Pretty affordable, definitely affordable here. Cheaper than a lot of the Twins that I recorded with you that dropped a couple days ago. Final question I have for you then. What are your expectations for 2026?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, you know, they went from winning 41 games to 60 games last year, which was a 19-game improvement. And I think that the pieces are there for them. I don't want to say they're going to finish 500 because I think that's going to be hard to do in this division. I mean, the Guardians are good. The Tigers are obviously very good in the class of the division. The Royals are always good. These guys just kind of beat each other up. And so if the Sox could get somewhere between 70 and 75 wins, I would be ecstatic as a fan based on what we've experienced the last couple of years. And I think they've got some pieces there that with some calculation, if they're able to get some of those higher octane pitchers up, and if those guys that they have in the lineup kind of continue to have the growth that they showed last year, they could surprise some people. They're definitely not going to be a team that's going to lose 18 or 19 games in a row anymore. They're definitely having competitive at bats. They definitely seem to have a plan and know what they're doing. It was refreshing last year, even though, you know, they would probably lose in the end. It was refreshing to see 23 and 24 year old guys with talent playing as opposed to some of the crap that we were witnessing with guys that were 35 years old and veterans who just didn't give a damn. It was fun and exciting. And in fact, I'll leave you with this. It was the first time in 2 or 3 years that I wasn't ashamed to show my favorite team to my son.
That says a lot, actually, yes.
Yeah, I mean, because he was in a phase where he was like, can we just be Brewers fans? And I'm like, well, we are kind of Brewers fans. That's our National League team, and we're fans of baseball because we watch so much MLB, you know, so many MLB games on the MLB Network and stuff like that. But I like what they're doing. I think that they're definitely moving in a direction. I think Chris Getz does have a plan. They're going to have the number one pick coming up in the summertime, which is really exciting. You know, there's a lot of speculation about what that's going to look like. It looks like they might take Rock, which would be great. Chalowski sounds like a Chicagoan to me.
That definitely sounds like, yeah.
you know, and they definitely are, they got some pieces going in the right direction. I think, you know, if they decide to trade Robert and Benintendi and open up some time for younger guys, I would be really excited to see what that looks like and what they might be able to get back in those trades. They've pretty much moved what they can move other than, you know, maybe some of these starting pitchers or relief pitchers if they end up being good, or Sosa. And so it's time to let the kids play. And I think you're going to see those guys get a lot of at-bats this year, and I think there's going to be some surprises for people.
Absolutely love it. Looking forward to seeing where they go. It's been a fun watching them get better and better and seeing it through your and other fans' eyes. There are some out there, not as many yet, but they will get there soon enough. So, Mike, as always, I appreciate it. Before we sign off, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Well, you can find me on Twitter with that terrible Twitter, RC0508, working at Rotoballer, working at Fantrax. I'm also doing the Fantasy Baseball Beat again this year with Dave Funnel. Also, it looks like I'm going to be covering some playing time for Baseball HQ as well for the White Sox this year. I got approached about doing that, and it's always been my dream to work at HQ with you and Ryan and a lot of the other dignitaries that work there. And so I got a lot going on. And, of course, Bubba, I always have to say this. I go back really, really almost to the beginning of time with your podcast. And so for me to be able to be on with you and be a guest is an honor and a thrill for me. You've always been kind and supportive of people who are trying to kind of get their foot in the door doing this stuff. And 5 years ago when I started writing and you gave me an opportunity to come on, it was one of the first times that I ever came onto a podcast. I was crapping my pants, nervous. You just have a great style. You have a great way about you. You and Ryan do killer work. You do killer work here. I'm so grateful to be part of your show and also to consider you a good friend, and love being able to catch up with you in Arizona and follow your exploits on everything that's going on. So I thank you, as always, for giving me an opportunity to come out and chat with you. I love talking with you, and I'm really grateful for your friendship.
Well, I appreciate it. The feelings are mutual, my friend. It's always great chatting with you, catching up with you, and watching you continue to spread your wings out there as you just keep going and going and going. And I can't wait to see what's next at HQ and other places for you, because it'll keep going. It's because you got the drive to do it and the baseball heart to do it as well. So thanks for joining me, and we'll chat again sooner than later as usual with the show. But if you guys aren't following Mr. Mike Carter, the good doctor, at MDRC0508. He is not a robot from Star Wars, I promise. Go check him out over there. You should be, because he's got the goods for you there. Go check out the Fantasy Baseball Beat, also another great show that gets things going as well. But until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 808, your 2026 Chicago White Sox team preview. Catch y'all next time.